Good evening, and thanks for tuning in on RMU Radio. This is Sports Takeover with Matt and Chris. We've got lots to cover, Chris, so let's get to it. We're going to start with a new segment called First and Short. We're going to hit a couple points that we just don't have time to talk about in depth on the show. Chris, why don't you lead us off with some record-setting Penguins?
Yeah, two good records set by players on the Pittsburgh Penguins this past week. First, let's go to Sidney Crosby, which over the past weekend passed Mario Lemieux for most games played in franchise history. Lemieux had 915 in his career. Crosby now has surpassed that, so he's the all-time leader in games played by a Pittsburgh Penguin. Evgeny Malkin is short there behind. He might pass Lemieux eventually, but as of right now, Crosby is the team leader. Additionally, Chris Letang has 109 goals now. I'm sure that number is also going to increase, but as it stands, that is one more than Paul Coffey had, which sets the new record for a Pittsburgh Penguins defenseman. So big congratulations to those two guys, two big milestones in the same week.
Yeah, and they passed two guys who are very storied in Penguins history, some Stanley Cup champions there, some of the best players to come through Pittsburgh, and we're watching guys on the ice now that are doing greater things than they did. So congratulations to Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang. Moving into some skiing, Lindsey Vonn retired. She captured a bronze medal in her final race, very fitting after the career that she had. Four-time Olympian, three-time medalist, one gold and two bronze in the Olympics. Seven world championships, and she took home seven medals there, two gold, three silver, two bronze, 82 World Cup wins. That's good for second all time. A fantastic career by Lindsey Vonn.
Yeah, definitely. She's probably the best female skier, at least in American history, certainly could even be considered in world history. So big congratulations to her on her whole career. Really good for her. Moving into the NFL, news I not necessarily knew, but still officially made this week. Kyler Murray has declared for the NFL draft. He will only pursue the National Football League. Baseball is no longer in question. That means he had to go with that big signing bonus he got with the A's. That's no matter for a guy who is passionate solely about American football. This is what he wants to do. Should be a first-round pick. Exciting to see what happens with him.
Yeah, so he's committed firmly to the NFL and has basically told the Oakland A's, thanks but no thanks. They drafted him ninth overall in 2018. He will have to return $1.29 million to the A's. Would have made $3.16 million if he was on the roster come March 1st. As it stands, he will not be. So Kyler Murray to the NFL for sure. Kareem Hunt, who we talked about a little bit ago, he has been signed after the incident that he went through. He's going to Cleveland on a one-year contract worth somewhere around $1 million. Of course, released by the Chiefs after a video of him assaulting a woman in Cleveland, I believe. Browns think he deserves a second chance. Two reasons they said: he admitted guilt and he's going through a program to get some help. We'll see how that pans out, but Kareem Hunt is back in the NFL already.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, as a pure talent standpoint, he is a good player, but as a person standpoint, he is not a good person. Should not be back in the league yet. $1 million is not a lot for the Browns to spend on this guy, so if you look at it from that perspective, it's good, but in general, bad for the league, bad for the Browns, bad in general. More football news, a little bit better though. Bob Stoops, he is headed to Dallas to be the new owner, general manager, coach, whatever you call it, of the Dallas XFL team. So he must have been a little tired after he got out of coaching, was Oklahoma Sooners coach for several years, retired for the past few seasons. Dallas called him up. XFL wants him. Vince McMahon wants him. Good to see Bob Stoops back in action. Should be exciting there.
Very interesting move by Bob Stoops. Personally, not super excited about the XFL. Obviously, he's a little bit more excited than I am. We'll see what that turns into for him after a successful college career. Back to the NFL today, Joe Flacco was announced to be heading to the Denver Broncos. Now, this can't become official until the new NFL year, which I believe is March 13th, but in principle, Joe Flacco is being traded to Denver. The return is said to be, in quote, a mid-round pick, whatever that means, third, fourth, fifth, I don't know, we'll see. But again, that's not official yet. He was benched last year for Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. I think it's a good fit. He won a Super Bowl in Baltimore with a great defense. That's certainly Denver's strength. We'll see where that turns out once that trade becomes official.
Yeah, he certainly has success in Denver, too, along that Super Bowl run they had a few years back, the Mile High Miracle. They are down by 7 to the Broncos. Somehow the Broncos defensive backs did not know how to make a play. Flacco led them back, ended up winning the Super Bowl. So good memories in Denver. Good to see him out of the division. He wasn't very good, in my opinion. Lamar Jackson is better, but he probably deserves an NFL spot. Here he found it. So congrats to him. That was First and Short. Now let's move back into our regularly scheduled programming, and we're going to kick off with football. I know we said we were done with the NFL, but we're not kicking off with the NFL. The Alliance of American Football, the AAF, its opening weekend was this past week. What kind of things do we see, Matt?
So I was super excited about this. We talked about it on the show last week, and I wasn't disappointed. This is a league that has been formed in less than a year, and I thought, all things considered, it was a pretty good product. I listened to Bill Polian talk a little bit before the opening games on Saturday, and his remarks about the developmental nature of the league, the fact that it's designed to teach players, allows them to get extra reps, develop for the NFL, learn what it takes to be in the NFL. I just think this league fills a need. I think it serves a great purpose. So that, for that reason, I was excited about it. I'm excited to continue to watch it. And we saw a little bit of everything. There were some games that didn't have a lot of scoring. There were some teams that couldn't stop scoring. Offensively, the Orlando Apollos put up 40 points in their first ever game. The Arizona Hotshots put up 38. So a couple teams there that certainly had no problem scoring some points. Defensively, the Birmingham Iron pitched a shutout. So obviously the best defensive performance there. The San Antonio Commanders gave up 6 points and in the process recorded 6 sacks and 3 interceptions. So certainly some exciting play there.
Yeah, the offense definitely is very hit and miss. Across the 4 games, you know, 8 teams, 4 games, there were 12 interceptions. That's not a great number. But then again, for as hard as it is for the NFL to find capable quarterbacks for all 32 teams, it's not a surprise that these 8 AAF teams, which is essentially minor league football,
right,
can't find starting quarterbacks that are capable. First week, you know, growing pains. It's going to happen. I expect that number to go down. Some teams had a lot of trouble. Like you said, San Diego only scored 6. Memphis got shut out. Atlanta only scored 6. We saw Orlando and Arizona both put up 40 and 38 respectively, so their offenses were clicking. Definitely some teams have it figured out. It's a 10-week season, though. Plenty of time. The defense, though, I did notice was actually looked like a reasonable defense. I mean, pass rushes were getting to the quarterback. Obviously, a lot of interceptions. A little bit of butterfingers, though. I saw some returns that were questionable. Once again, happens in the NFL. Just on a greater display when there's only 4 games to watch as opposed to 16, might get lost in the shuffle. But definitely some fumbles here and there. But the rain, I can't imagine, helped that. It was raining in a few of these games. It's exciting. I'm really excited to see where it goes. It's minor league football. It's not trying to compete with the NFL. Their partnership with the NFL on the NFL Network even. So NFL understands that this isn't going to take away from their viewership. It's just going to help grow the fan base, the player base, see what kind of people might help develop. I like it a lot. First weekend was a great showing.
Yeah, I agree. And you talk about some of the things that can be improved upon. And of course, there's lots of room to improve. They're 1 week in, less than a year into this whole thing. And I didn't realize until I heard it on the broadcast, these teams have only spent a month together, which is a really quick turnaround when you're trying to put together an NFL team. And you talked about some of the drops. My biggest complaint was the play of the offensive lines, specifically that of the San Diego Fleet, because I'm sure if you saw any highlight from the AAF weekend, it was the quarterback for San Diego getting absolutely lit up, helmet flying off, definitely wouldn't have been a flag in the NFL, was not in the AAF, and it was no one's fault except for the offensive line, because the guy came in unblocked, and you kind of saw things like that throughout all of the games. But again, they've only been together for a month. There's lots of room to improve. Couple of individuals, though, that had some fantastic weeks. John Wolford, quarterback for Arizona, 18 of 29 for 275 yards and 4 touchdowns, and added 2 two-point conversions. Of course, in the AAF, you have to go for the two-point conversion. So obviously, he led one of the best offenses in the league there and looked pretty good doing it. Garrett Gilbert was the quarterback for Orlando. He was 15 of 25 for 227 yards, 2 passing touchdowns, a receiving touchdown, and a two-point conversion. So he got the job done as well. And then defensively, Terrence Garvin for Orlando, 8 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, 2 pass breakups, 2 interceptions, and a touchdown. So we certainly had some standouts there. The one other thing that I thought was very impressive about their debut, 2.9 million viewers tuned in to watch on Saturday.
That's a good number.
It's a really good number when you consider that 2.5 million tuned in to watch the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets on ABC. So in their very first weekend, first time ever playing football, they outdid the NBA. I think that speaks to what this league can become and how successful they can be. And I thought it was a really good opening week for them.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned Terrence Garvin with the great defensive stats. He actually stood out, too. Like, if you're watching the game, you could see him making plays. John Wolford, you said, had 4 touchdowns. All 3 teams didn't even combine to score 4 touchdowns. So for him to do 4 on his own, that's pretty impressive. Kickers really weren't that bad either. Most of the teams that went for field goals converted them. I think there might have been 1 or 2 missed field goals, which I know the NFL, we talked about this in the fall, that there were epidemic of kickers missing, none of these kickers really missed that many points at all. And some of these kickers have been in the NFL before. In fact, the first points scored in the AAF were by Youngway Koo with a field goal for Orlando, I believe it was.
Yes.
So some of these kickers that have maybe had a little bit more rocky time in the NFL, maybe they just need a little bit of a smaller stage to show out what they can do. Obviously, they weren't 55-yard field goals in front of 60,000 fans, but needless to say, kicking a football through uprights is the same across, you know, both sports. So good for the kickers. It was really fun to see. I like to see some of the coaches that got back into it too. Steve Spurrier, Mike Singletary. Riley was a coach with Nebraska. Singletary was with the Niners, among other teams. Spurrier with South Carolina and Florida for so long. So these guys who had been out of, you know, main circuit coaching for a few years, hey, it's a shorter season, a little bit lesser competition, less importance, but they can still coach like they want to, what they love doing. It's good to see these guys back on the sideline.
Yeah, and again, going back to what Bill Polian said, who's one of the co-founders of the league, he wanted these experienced coaches because the idea of the league is to develop these players. And you can't develop the players properly without having coaches who have been there and done it already. And I'll tell you what, if there is anything that you can give this league credit for, it's finding good coaches. These are definitely guys that these players are going to learn from. Going back to the kickers, Nick Novak was another one who had a fantastic week. He's a 10-year vet in the NFL, so he's certainly been around a couple times. He had, I believe, 9 points, or at least definitely had the first 9 points for the Birmingham Iron. So a very nice afternoon for him. And you talked about kickers missing in the NFL. I honestly thought we'd see more kickers miss here simply because that's all that they do. They don't kick extra points. There are no kickoffs. So if you're a kicker, you are only on the field when you're kicking a field goal. And for me, I just thought that it would be hard for them to stay warmed up, stay prepared to kick. But you said it. We really didn't see that many missed kicks. So I certainly think kickers, if anyone, can certainly make a name for themselves and find themselves a job in the NFL next year if they play well. I thought that was interesting. That surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, definitely some good stuff there. Great first week action. Got 9 more weeks to happen. You can catch 2 games on NFL Network each weekend. Some more games will be on CBS, CBS Sports, TNT throughout the season. Should be exciting to see what happens moving forward.
Yeah, we have Salt Lake at Birmingham on Saturday at 2 p.m. That game is on TNT. Arizona at Memphis Saturday night, 8 o'clock on NFL Network. Orlando at San Antonio Sunday at 4 on CBS Sports. And Atlanta takes on San Diego Sunday night, 8 o'clock, NFL Network.
Moving ahead, a lot of NBA news last week. The trade deadline was February 7th, and there was no shortage of big blockbuster trades. We said it before, LeBron James out of the Eastern Conference this year, it's really wide open for anybody's taking, and a lot of these teams really jumped on the opportunity. I'm going to start with Toronto, which made 2 moves. First was sending Greg Monroe to Brooklyn for some cash. That helped free up some space for the bigger move they made, which was getting Marc Gasol, the veteran from Memphis, in exchange for C.J. Miles, Jonas Valanciunas, Dylan Wright, and a second rounder. Gasol is a great power forward center, really a great big man, one of the best players in Grizzly history. He'll make an immediate impact with Toronto. Staying in the Eastern Conference, Milwaukee was involved in a 3-team trade where they ended up with Nikola Mirotic, another great big man, really adds another good dynamic piece to their offense. Detroit got Thon Maker in return, and the Pelicans got Stanley Johnson, Jason Smith, and 4 second rounders. So good for the Pelicans trying to rebuild. They're obviously out of contention this year, and even better for Milwaukee. Philadelphia, we talked about before last week, they got Tobias Harris. They had a little bit of a smaller move this week, kind of giving up more. They sent former first number one overall pick Markelle Fultz to Orlando in exchange for Jonathan Simmons, a first and a second. So they got some draft prospects back in return with the 2 draft picks right there. Markelle Fultz clearly just did not work out well enough with Philadelphia. They've made moves for now. He is more of a future standpoint, so good for Orlando. What else do we see, Matt?
Well, I'm going to stay there for the moment because for me, those were the biggest winners. You started with Toronto, so I'll go to Toronto first. Marc Gasol is a fantastic pickup, former Defensive Player of the Year, and you and I have talked about this off air. I've talked about it on air. I don't like rental players, and Marc Gasol is under contract until 2020. So you're getting a guy that can make you better now, but that you're not taking one shot with, and then he's gone and you're trying again. This is a guy who's going to stay with them. I don't think they gave up anything huge, which they did not need to do, as they currently sit in second at 41-16. So I thought that was a great move by the Raptors to bring in a fantastic player without giving up a lot of what's already working for them. Going to the Bucks, Nico Mirotic is having a career year, so bringing him in I think is fantastic. It's a good move, again, to keep up with these other teams in the East that are making moves without going overboard, because the Bucks are sitting in first, the only team ahead of the Raptors. So for them to bring in a guy who has some upside, who's showing his upside this year, I think that's a good move for the Bucks. 76ers bring in Tobias Harris from the Clippers. And then you talked about the Fultz trade. They gave up a lot of picks to get Harris. They get some picks back for Fultz. I think the Fultz trade makes the Harris trade even better, because not only do they have Harris in the present, they get those draft picks back now for the future. In a way, they essentially trade Fultz for Harris, a guy who wasn't working for them, for a guy who was working for the Clippers. I think it's great that they're able to improve right now without sacrificing their future. So I thought those three teams were the biggest winners for me. They all kept up with each other, and I think they solidified themselves in the East.
Yeah, the thing with Marc Gasol is, yeah, he's basically, you know exactly where you're going to get from. He's averaging 15 points in his career, 15 points per game this season, even rebounds, about 8 rebounds a game. So it's a guy who definitely, you know what you're going to get from. Valanciunas, he is a good player, but Marc Gasol is an upgrade to him. Veteran leadership, something that Toronto, lacks a little bit. Kyle Lowry has been there for some time now, but most of the other players in that team are relatively new, less than 4 years or whatever the case may be. Gasol, he's 34, so he's definitely been around. He's been to the playoffs many times. A lot of these Raptor players maybe haven't made as deep playoff runs as Gasol actually has on Memphis.
Probably only Kawhi.
Yeah, really. Lowry has a little bit, but not too much experience. But, Memphis has made conference finals before. Get me wrong.
Sure.
Definitely good experience there. Fultz, that was – you hit the nail on the head right there. He was a guy that wasn't doing it for the Sixers. Well, they're in a position now to win, getting Tobias Harris, giving up picks, but getting rid of Fultz to get picks back. You kind of put yourself in the same situation. Sixers really don't need to rely on draft picks that much either. They've built through the draft the last 4 seasons or so. So right now they need to focus on those players instead of thinking, all right, well, who am I going to get next year? Obviously these players that they get in the draft will contribute to their team, but it's not going to be the make or break factor on their team. And Milwaukee is already excellent position. They could be the front runner in the East. They're in first place. They are ranked top 5 in both offense and defense. Mirotic, you said, is having a career year, so why not go out, spend the extra bucks whenever you see everybody else in the Eastern Conference doing the same thing. It's good for them. A little bit more minor trades that happened in the Western Conference. Some players staying in the same city as the Clippers and Lakers made a swap. The Clippers received Michael Beasley and Ivica Zubac in exchange for Mike Muscala, who went to the Lakers. Muscala was part of the trade last week, sending him to the Clippers. So staying in the same city, different team again. Michael Beasley, though, he's kind of a veteran that's been up and down. Zubac is a guy that was talked about being potentially in the Davis trade, along with half the team, though, really. So hard to say who wasn't going to go in that one. Clippers also made a trade with Memphis. They received Jamichael Green and Garrett Temple in exchange for Avery Bradley. Once again, not too major, some little pieces, I guess. The Clippers just need to bring fans in this season. I really don't think they're going to compete in the Western Conference necessarily.
No, I don't think so.
Especially
either.
When you see them getting rid of Tobias Harris. So I guess just some pieces to help get their team fully formed. And another 3-team trade occurred. Houston, Cleveland, Sacramento, where Houston received Iman Shumpert, Nick Stauskas, Wade Baldwin, and a second rounder. Cleveland got Marquise Chris, Brandon Knight, who was a good point guard for Phoenix, a first rounder and a second rounder, and the Sacramento Kings received Alec Burks and a second rounder. Houston then took Nick Stauskas and Wade Baldwin, sent them to the Pacers, where they were waived. So those guys have just had a rough time in the last week, been traded to 3 different teams, and now are no longer on a team. Another minor one, which kind of struck home with me, Harrison Barnes got traded in the middle of the game by Dallas. He got traded to Sacramento in exchange for Justin Jackson and Zach Randolph. Once again, nothing that's going to make major headlines. I just kind of thought it was not great to trade Barnes in the middle of the game, seeing how neither of these two teams were really in a dire need to make either of these two trades, and the fact that they sent him out in the middle of the game just kind of seemed a little scummy to me.
Yeah, I think the thing that stands out to me about those trades is not the impact that they'll have on the court, but man, some of these guys are having a rough go. You get traded twice just to be waived at the end, Harrison Barnes in the middle of the game. It's a tough time to be a player, which is kind of a weird thing to think about. I think people don't usually look at it that way, but it is a business. This does happen around this time of year, and it's not easy for these guys. As far as the trades go for the team, I agree with you. I don't think it's anything earth-shattering. Like I said, my big winners were all in the East. I don't know that any of these trades are going to make a difference this year at least. I don't know, maybe they have a long-term plan in place, but I don't see these trades as being anything earth-shattering or anything that's going to make the difference between a championship run and not.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that a few teams stayed a little bit more quiet than I would have expected. Boston didn't move anybody. Obviously, they had a good team built from last year, still good this year. Indiana, too, seeing how Victor Oladipo is done for the season, you might have thought they wanted to get, you know, a good experienced guard to help fill the void for this year, seeing how they do currently sit in the top half of the Eastern Conference, but they stayed quiet. Golden State, I don't know, that's surprising they stayed quiet, but they didn't make any trades. They have everybody they need by now. Lakers really didn't make the big move that people kind of thought they, I don't know if people thought they wanted to, but they certainly wanted, the fans wanted to see a big name go to the LA. Didn't exactly happen. Also, Denver Nuggets stayed quiet. They're a team that's competing in the West. Portland Trailblazers, I mean, really nobody in the West made any big headlines. It was all the East.
Yeah, so let me start with Boston quick because I'm kind of torn on whether this deadline is a win or a loss for Boston, because I see it in a way as a win because Anthony Davis wasn't traded. And I'm not saying that the Celtics are necessarily where he's going to go, but they had no chance, as we talked about previously, they had no chance of getting him at the deadline because of his contract being the same type as Kyrie Irving's. Boston couldn't have both of them at the same time. So the fact that Anthony Davis didn't go to, say, Philadelphia or Toronto or somebody that Boston will be competing against, and the fact that they'll have a chance at him in the summer, I think is great for them. On the flip side, we talk about the 76ers, Raptors, and Bucks being the biggest winner at the deadline, and the Celtics didn't do anything. So you're looking at the teams that you're competing with directly making themselves better while you sit there and watch. So for that reason, I think the deadline, I think the Celtics are a loser at this year's deadline. So I'm very torn on the Celtics. I think if nothing else, this shows that they are the weaker of this big four, if that's what you want to call it in the East. For me, these are the top four. I think Boston's easily number four after this deadline. Moving forward, if they can get Anthony Davis, then maybe this you can consider this a win that he didn't go somewhere else. Go ahead.
But the one thing that's really interesting about Boston, obviously, we like trades, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
They're fun
trades
to see.
Trades are fun. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Boston not making one, not so fun. However, they did play the Sixers last night. Very competitive game. Great game. I watched it all while I was at work because it was that busy. But it was great time to see these two teams in a potential playoff matchup going up against each other. Boston ended up on top. All the experts had Philly. Philly was the favorite in the game. Yet Boston won by three. So they didn't necessarily need to make the move. I think they might have all the pieces they need right now to compete for a championship. It'll be interesting to see if they go up against a Toronto or a Milwaukee. I think Boston and Philly is kind of the rivalry people want to see, but then Toronto and Milwaukee is its own thing. I think people want to see whoever comes from those two guys' games bash into each other in the conference finals. But right now, though, Boston doesn't exactly necessarily need that player that all these other teams thought they did.
I don't totally agree with that. I think there's a big difference between winning one game and winning a best of seven. I certainly think Boston can compete, and I wouldn't be shocked if they knock off one of these three teams. I don't think they can get through all of them to win the East because they didn't make a move. That's just me. Going back to the Lakers, you talked about them. For me, they're one of the biggest losers because they didn't make a trade when it's quite clear that their team is only LeBron James, or essentially, for the purposes of competing for a championship, it's only LeBron James. They have other good players, but all around, it's just one guy. And they tried to trade for Anthony Davis, came up short, but even worse than coming up short is that, as you mentioned, they tried to trade almost their entire team. How you think the chemistry in your locker room is going to be anything but negative after you try to ship half those guys out the door, especially when LeBron kind of has a reputation of being the GM almost of his team.
And coach.
Yeah, and the coach, calling all the shots, not saying that he did or didn't. It's just the fact that that reputation is there. That's what they tried to do. They were very public with trying to ship out half the guys on their roster, and now you're trying to move forward without having made a move. I think that's going to be tough, and I think without making a move to their roster, they might be worse off than they were before the deadline. I will see. I don't think they were going to be a contender anyway, but we'll see. The Knicks are my other big loser. Trading Porzingis to Dallas. I've read articles that say, oh, well, they freed up some cap space. They can make big runs now in the offseason at guys like Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. One thing that drives me insane about the NBA is the fact that we can't live in right now. We have to look forward to next summer and the summer after that and the summer 5 years from now and see who's going to be a free agent and what teams are going to clear cap space to go after them. If they go out and they use the cap space that would have gone towards Porzingis and they get Kevin Durant and they make the playoffs next year, then maybe you can consider it a win. But for me right now, clearing up cap space to go after guys that I don't think would have any interest in going to a place like the Knicks, a team that haven't been appealing since the early Carmelo days. I just think it's a big stretch to say that this is a successful trade for them in any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, the Knicks definitely are a team I actually had forgotten about just because of how god-awful they've been. They're on a 17-game losing streak. That is
But they cleared cap space, Chris.
Right, yeah. But the thing is, they don't really what kind of thing besides New York City entices a player to want to go there? They got rid of their best player, which Porzingis is a guy you can definitely build around. You know, credit to the Mavericks for getting him. They now have Porzingis and Doncic that they can build for the next 10, 15 years. That's good for them. But who on the Knicks can they build around? They got Dennis Smith Jr., former top 10 pick, but he's not exactly someone's clamoring to play with, you know, knocking down your door. Oh, please, Knicks, I want to play with Dennis Smith Jr. No. If they Kyrie goes there, Dennis Smith's not even going to be the starter on the team. I don't think that that's the ideal New York destination. If anything, Brooklyn is. Brooklyn currently sits in a playoff spot. We'll have the cap space in the offseason to make a run at Kevin Durant, maybe try to trade for Anthony Davis, make a run at a Kyrie Irving. They have players that are doing well this year, too. So Brooklyn really is the ideal New York destination. I just don't – the Knicks need to focus on winning. For as valuable as the Knicks are for the storied history the Knicks have, you know, being a New York basketball team playing at Madison Square Garden, you think they just want to try harder now. Even when they went all in on Carmelo and Amari Stoudemire a few years ago, they never made a conference final. They've never made an NBA final. And if anything, that petered out. So who's to say what they do this offseason will even be as good as it was when they did it with Carmelo? I just don't like the moves that they made either.
No, I don't either. Porzingis is the guy that would have drawn Kyrie Irving, that would have drawn Kevin Durant. He's gone. I don't think there's anything to draw them. Clear all the cap space you want. I really don't think it's going to matter. I think the Knicks are a big loser. As far as favorites going forward, I already said I think it's Milwaukee, Toronto, and Philadelphia in the East. Boston will be there, but I don't think that they're quite up to the level that those other three are.
Could play spoiler.
They could. Like I said, I think they could beat one or two. I don't think they can. If they have to go through all three, I don't think they will.
That would be rough, yeah.
In the West, for me, it's just Golden State. And Golden State didn't need to make any moves. They're easily the most talented team in the NBA. I thought someone around them would go for a big move. Oklahoma City's kind of relying on Westbrook. Houston's kind of relying on Harden. Golden State doesn't have to do that. They have pick your superstar. If two of them are in a slump, the rest of them will go off. So I think it's one of those four teams right now.
Yeah, definitely. The West is a lot closer or a lot further away, I guess, in competition. Yeah. I mean, it's Golden State. Golden State's its own tier. Then below them, you got OKC. Denver's having a solid season. Nobody's really talking about them because I don't think people think much of them. Portland also is right up there, too. OKC, in my opinion, is the biggest direct competitor. You said they're kind of going through Westbrook. Paul George is putting up MVP-type numbers, too, this year.
He is having a good season, yeah.
Yeah, he got a triple-double the other night. He had 47 points or something. I mean, that's just ridiculous. He's, you know, giving Harden a run for his money, but the Rockets are in no position as they were last year. It's just James Harden on that team. I mean, yes, there's Chris Paul. Yes, there's Clint Capella, but it's just James Harden. I mean, the guy's averaging almost 36 points a game. If he has one off night in a 7-game series, well, you're already one in the hole. And when you're going to go up against superstars like Golden State has, it's really hard to compete. It's really the West is Golden State's to lose.
Yeah. The NBA is Golden State's to lose.
Yeah. The East is really up for grabs. Should be exciting to see where we go forward from here. However, where we go forward from here is into a break. So please stay tuned where we're going to come back with some MLB talk, a racing talk, and of course, NHL talk as always. Please stay tuned. She keeps them away, Shonda, in a pretty cabinet. Anthony Cake, she says, just like Marie Antoinette, a building a remedy for Khrushchev and Kennedy. At any time, an invitation you can't take.
She's a killer queen, gunpowder, gelatine, dynamite with a
Welcome back to Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. Let's shift gears from NBA trades to Major League Baseball trades. JT Realmuto is on his way from Miami to Philadelphia. What does the new catcher do for the Phillies?
Well, it keeps the Philadelphia trade market wide open. As we talked about, they made some good trades in the NBA. Let's extend that kind of trade thought process to the MLB. So Realmuto won Silver Slugger last year in the National League for catcher, has been stuck on It's a bad Marlins team, but only because they get rid of every single player they possibly could own. Last year, Realmuto was able to put up 21 home runs, 74 RBIs, hit .277 with a .340 on base percentage and a .484 slugging, had a 4.3 WAR, which was first among catchers. That's a huge upgrade for Philadelphia, considering last year they only had 1.7 total WAR for catchers. That was spread amongst three people. Jorge Alfaro had a 1.2. Wilson Ramos had a 0.8 for just playing after the trade deadline, and Andrew Knapp had a negative 0.3. So Realmuto already adds an immediate impact for Philly. The return for Miami isn't tremendously great. Miami actually got Jorge Alfaro as the main centerpiece of this trade, the catcher for the Phillies last year, along with right-handed pitcher Sixto Sanchez, left-handed pitcher Will Stewart, and $250,000 in international slot money. What that's going to do for Miami? Not much, but we're focused on Philadelphia. What Realmuto can do for them. Defensively, he'll help out a lot more too. Alfaro had the most pass balls and the most steals allowed in the Major League Baseball circuit last year.
Yikes.
That's bad considering he caught only 104 of the games too.
Yikes.
So Realmuto certainly adds a defensive stable hold there. Among the three Phillies catchers last year, they combined for 15 home runs, 69 RBIs, and only hit .253. So in 162 game season, they did less than Realmuto did playing about 140 games.
Yeah, and Andrew Knapp is the only other catcher that's currently on the roster, 27-year-old who's only played parts of two seasons. Last year in 84 games, he batted .198 with four home runs, 15 RBIs, struck out 75 times, .294 on base percentage, and .316 slugging percentage. So not a lot to report there. Huge addition for the Philadelphia Phillies. And you talked about the Marlins selling everybody on their team.
Fire sale.
JT Realmuto was the last player remaining from the 2017 opening day starting lineup for the Marlins. So in a matter of less than 2 years, everybody who was starting on opening day for them is gone.
Incredible.
He was the last one. That's an insane number. Everyone's on the way out of Miami, so I'm sure that Realmuto is very happy to be in Philadelphia, who has had a nice offseason. They've also added Gene Segura, Andrew McCutchen, David Robertson, just extended Aaron Nola today, which we're going to talk about, and they're still in play for Harper and Machado. So I think even if they don't land either of those guys, it's a good offseason. If they do land one of those guys, I think they're the favorite in the National League East, a team that was 80-82 last year. They weren't that far out of contention, 10 games behind the Braves, who won the division. And Realmuto is under contract through the 2020 season. So again, not a rental player. This is a guy who's going to be there for an extended period of time. And I think it gives Philadelphia a reason to be optimistic.
Yeah, I know you hate rental players, but loving that JT is under contract, that's a very favorable contract for Philly as well. So he's 27, prime of his career, you know, these next 3-4 years or so. Good time to have a good catcher. He's only worth $5.9 million this year, which is only ranking 11th among all catchers in the league. That means there's 10 higher catchers than him. Well, he was the best catcher in the National League last year. So when there's 10 people being paid higher than you to do a job that you did better than anybody else in your league, you're doing something right. He will obviously deserve a bigger payout whenever his contract is up. But for this season, it is certainly cap friendly. You said they made a lot of good other trades. You said maybe they're the National League East contender. I think they might be one of the favorites in the National League at all.
Very possibly.
I mean, they people thought they were a good team last year. I think they were just 1 year away from realizing their true potential. A lot of young guys on that team, you know, had some hiccups here and there, obviously didn't finish where they wanted to, but optimistic moving forward. When you bring in a lot of good veterans like Real Muto, like McCutcheon, like Robertson, these are guys that are going to help, you know, these are the pieces you need to maybe get you over that final hump. And extending Aaron Nola, I think, is the straw that will break the camel's back on the Phillies not being National League East champions this year. Aaron Nola last year was top three in the Cy Young race, had a phenomenal season. He just signed a four-year, $45 million extension today, actually, which good average value for the Phillies. That's only a little over $11 million a year. Not that much money for a guy who finished top three in Cy Young voting when you figure Max Scherzer is getting paid $30 million a season. You know, making a third of that is great. They have a fifth-year club option for Nola, so that will be at minimum 1 year after pre-arbitration under his control, 2 years if they exercise a club option. So after this, he's probably going to get a big payday of at least $25 million. But for the fact that they can keep him for only $45 million over the course of 4 years, great move for the Phillies.
Yeah, so you're looking at roughly $17 million between a Cy Young caliber pitcher and an all-star silver slugger catcher. So I think certainly some great moves for the Phillies. I definitely think it makes them a favorite in the National League East. And like I said, Harper and Machado are still in play. It could still get better from here for the Phillies.
Yeah, ideally we'll talk about a landing spot for Harper and Machado next week, the week after. Just sometime give us something to talk about, please.
Maybe. In the meantime, we'll move into NASCAR. Season preview. Chris, this is your domain, so I will let you kick things off.
One of the great things about NASCAR, 36 races over the course of 52 weeks. That means you got a short off season. We just talked about the season wrapping up mid-November. Here we are mid-February. It's ready to get back underway, and it will get underway with an odd format for NASCAR amongst other sports. The biggest race of the year, Daytona 500, the first race. Most people kind of look towards the end of the season as the biggest race. Well, NASCAR kicks everything off with a bang going to Daytona, and it should be a whirlwind. I'm going to go over some of the switches, though, between drivers and teams that happened this offseason because, like in every other sport, free agents move around, and NASCAR is no exception. So Kurt Busch switched from Stuart Haas Racing to Chip Ganassi. He's going to drive the number one now, was the 41. Ryan Newman switched from Richard Childress Racing to Roush Fenway, was the 31, going to drive the 6. Martin Truex Jr., former Cup champion, in contention last year for the title. Furniture Row Racing is no more. They are no longer operating, so he is going to move to Joe Gibbs, which is another top-tier team. He's going from the 78 into the 19. Oh, but the 19, that was Daniel Suarez. Where is he going? Great question, you say. He is going to replace Kurt Busch at Stuart Haas, driving the 41. Daniel Hemric, a guy nobody's really heard of much. He's going to compete for Rookie of the Year as he drives the number 8 for Richard Childress Racing. That replaces the slot left vacant by Ryan Newman. And there's one driver left out of this mix. If we're going to put a new guy in, who's the old guy out? Jay McMurray has officially retired. He will be a Fox analyst. So there's the quick rundown of all the changes. Hope you could keep up. It's hard to keep up these first few races, but as the season progresses, it'll be easier to understand. One bigger move that happened, though, was between Jimmy Johnson and his crew chief, Chad Knaus. Chad Knaus is arguably one of the best crew chiefs in all of NASCAR history. He's been with Jimmy Johnson for 16 seasons, been with him for every single championship. The only time he's missed a race has been because of suspensions. He is now going to be the crew chief of Jimmy Johnson's teammate, William Byron. First time that Johnson will be racing without Chad Knaus in 16 seasons. Should be interesting. Maybe the move Johnson needed to not have as strong of a time last year. It's already working out for him, though, as the preseason race, so to speak, the Advanced Auto Parts Clash. It was a 20-car race that held this past weekend at Daytona. The previous pole winners of the last season were able to compete in a short race. A little purse, kind of get everybody geared up for the season. Johnson ended up winning that race, actually, so he is kicking off his year really well.
Catch your breath, Chris. Take a drink. Holy cow. So Jimmy Johnson is going to be pursuing his 8th championship this year, something that no driver has ever done. Last year, as you kind of alluded to, not a good year for him. No wins, only 2 top fives. So a Jimmy Johnson bounce back season is something to keep an eye on. Joey Logano is the defending champion. We'll see where he goes from here. And then you talked about Martin Truex Jr. He was second last season, won the title in 2017. You talked about him switching. We'll see what kind of season he has as he tries to reclaim his title. Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch were the other two that finished in the top four. They were in contention going into the last race last season. They each have won championships in their career, Harvick in 14, Busch in 15. So we'll see if those guys can climb back to the top. The last time that the champion of NASCAR was not either Jimmy Johnson or someone who finished in the top four last year, it was 2012 when Brad Keselowski won. So we've seen a lot of the same in recent years. It'll be interesting to see. And one thing I'll be keeping an eye on is whether or not we can get a new name towards the top contending into the final race of the season.
Yeah, there's a lot of young guys that people, including myself, want to see do better, compete for a championship right now. Kyle Larson's one of those guys. He was up at the end a few years ago, didn't obviously make the final cut at the final race. William Byron is a new guy, also early in his career, could be making some big moves with Hendrick. Chase Elliott's a guy that did well last year. This could be the year that he actually finally gets to reach his full potential. Austin Dillon, he drives the famous number three made famous by Dale Earnhardt. People would love to see that car back in the championship circle once again. So should be exciting to see some new guys. But I got to really imagine it's going to be some of the same old with these old guys, though. They're obviously competing at the top of the circuit for a good reason. They're the best drivers in the sport right now. Jimmy Johnson is one that's fallen off a little bit, but Harvick, Busch, and Truex, they've really been dominating the sport for each of the last 3 to 4 years. So I don't know that they'll necessarily change this year. Maybe some of the new younger guys can kind of reach their way up. This Sunday, the Daytona 500 will be on Fox at 2:30. William Byron will be on the pole for that race. Fifth straight year that a member of Hendrick Motorsports is on the pole. So interesting factoid for you. Take that as you will. Last year, Austin Dillon won the race. And another fun fact about the race, of the last 11 winners, 8 of them have been first-time winners. So hopefully we'll see that trend continue this Sunday.
Well, if we're going to see someone new contend come the end of the season, there's no better place to start than Daytona, it sounds like. So interesting to see what happens there. NASCAR season is just around the corner. Moving into the National Hockey League, we only have one big headline this week. Randy Carlyle out in Anaheim, no longer the head coach after his second stint with the team. Is that the right decision?
Is it the right decision? You bet it's the right decision. The Ducks were a team going to the season that I thought were going to be horrible. Understandably so, they are now at the bottom, but the way in which they got there is very odd. They were at the top of the Pacific Division for some time at the beginning of the season. However, over their last 21 games, they have gone 2-15-4. This is following 11-2 stretch too. So the Ducks were doing really well, and then I don't know what kind of wall they hit. Maybe the one Trump's trying to build, but they hit some kind of wall for sure that has just knocked them back down to earth. A lot of injuries on the team. I'll give them some credit for that. It's hard to come up with that, but my God, 2-15-4 is just horrid. A move has to be made. I don't know that their GM, Bob Murray, going behind the bench is the right move, though. We've seen some other GMs in the past go behind the bench. Lou Lamoriello in Florida a few years ago did the same thing. Obviously, didn't really have that tremendous results for Florida. Anaheim is not in a position this year to compete. Murray understands that. That's why he's going to wait until the offseason instead of trying to scramble, put together some sort of haphazard team to compete this year. He understands where his team is. Over that 21 games, too, they've given up 81 goals, or 82 goals. That's about 4 a game. And they've only scored 34, which is about 1.5 a game. Not good things happening in Anaheim.
Yeah, so I agree that it's the right move. And I also agree that their general manager becoming the head coach is not the best direction to go. I don't like that move. He's a very good general manager. 2014 GM of the year. He's been a finalist for that award 3 times. He's also the winningest and longest serving general manager in Anaheim history. So the man can do his job. He's a very good general manager. To do that and be the coach, I don't necessarily love, but it is the right decision. And the interesting thing, and this is my opinion, I don't think Randy Carlyle would have been fired if the Ducks were in the same position that they are right now, but had been average all season. I think the fact that they have been so horrendous in the last 2 months is the reason he got fired, because they're only 8 points out of a playoff spot. They are, despite being last in the Western Conference, they are by no means out of it. I just think it's the fact that they were clinging to a playoff spot for most of the season and then all of a sudden forgot how to play hockey. For crying out loud, they have the worst goal differential at minus 55, and they have 2 wins since Christmas.
Oh, man.
2 wins since Christmas. This team is just a disaster, but it's only been a disaster for the last 2 months. Prior to that, it was a playoff team. I really think he coached himself out of a job by doing well at the beginning of the season. Because, again, I think if they had been average the whole way and sat in the same position, I think he's still the head coach.
That's a really interesting theory you bring up there. I actually hadn't thought of it that way. I don't know that he still would have been the coach, because Anaheim is a team that pretty much this entire decade, you could extend it even the last decade, they've competed for a Pacific Division title pretty much every year, gone to Western Conference Finals several years too, haven't been to a Stanley Cup Final, however, since they won it back in 2007, though. So,
with Randy Carlyle.
Right. Yeah, he had a little bit of intermission in between, came back, said, all right, guys, this is how it's done. I'm going to show you how to do it again. Didn't quite get there. The team this year, I don't think on paper was a team that people would have expected to be one of the best in the West as the, you know, year in and year out, you kind of, okay, yeah, the Ducks are going to be up here, you know, kind of the same sense you would have thought the Blackhawks for a few years. Well, we've seen the Blackhawks fall off, and obviously Joe Quenneville got the same treatment that Randy Carlyle got too. So maybe sometimes that just getting rid of the coach is the right move, regardless of the play. You know, sometimes it's just one move that you need to make, even though it might not be a favorable one, it might be the one that's necessary. I think getting rid of him, while it was hard, I think it was necessary at this point in time.
So I'll make the same argument for Quenneville that I just made for Carlyle. I think if the Blackhawks hadn't been poor at the beginning and figured out how to turn it on now, he'd still be the coach. They're in an even better position than the Ducks are, despite not being in a good position. I think had they been average the whole season, Quenneville would still be their coach. And given Anaheim's recent play, I can see why it's a good move. But at the same time, I think you have to have a realistic expectation for your team and not just take it out on the coach. Because for me, and I think for you too, we could kind of see coming into the season, well, definitely for you, you said Anaheim would be the worst team in the league. I think you can see going in that the roster that they have isn't one that's going to compete this year, because I highly doubt you said they would be the worst team in hockey because Randy Carlyle was their coach.
No.
It's because the guys on their team are equipped to play hockey in 2007, when they were in their prime and when hockey was still as physical as these guys still want to play it now. The sport has changed. They have gotten older. Your team has to adapt. And I said how good Bob Murray has been as a general manager in his career. Put him to the test. Make him make moves to bring your team up to standards that where the other teams are right now. I don't necessarily think that this was a team that was going to succeed from the beginning. I think the beginning of the season was deceiving for them. I think these last 2 months are a bit extreme. I can see why he was fired, but for Quenneville and for Carlyle both, I think they were fired because they didn't have the right team to work with. So I think that I think it's a good move because of how bad they've been recently, but I think there's lots and lots of work to be done for the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good point you make. You kind of made that same point when we talked about the Kings firing their coach a few months back.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
They're an older team that was built for physicality. I mean, if you look at the team, there's a lot of big guys on it. Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaff. Those are big guys. It's a speedy league now. The league is changing. It's dynamic. Teams change, too. Obviously, you're not going to compete at a high level for, you know, 10, 15 years. There's going to be years you need to take off in between. The Ducks, I think, are reaching that point. I thought that going into the season. I mean, it's all old players, save John Gibson and Cam Fallard. And John Gibson really has been considered to be a Vezina candidate somehow on a team that is sitting last in the West. He is keeping them actually afloat even. I can't imagine how bad they would have been if he's not on the team. But even recently, they've been giving up 4 or 6 goals games. Gibson's just been getting no support from him. Another interesting factoid I found out from Bob Murray, the Ducks are no longer going to be holding mooring skates throughout the end of the season. The ice will be available for players, but it won't be mandatory. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know what to think about that. That's kind of strange. I've never heard of that approach before. I think that's why he's a general manager, not a coach. I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely not something you're used to seeing.
If I can just say one more thing, again, to back up some of these coaches that have been fired, from 2010 to 2017 in the Western Conference, who did you expect to come out of it? The Blackhawks, the Kings, or the Ducks?
Yeah.
Those were the only three teams, I think, that we ever really looked at as a threat. Maybe the Sharks, but for the most part, it was those three teams. So why are those the three teams now that are falling out of contention in the West? Because all three of their coaches forgot how to coach? Because all of their players forgot how to play? It's because the game is changing, because players are getting older, because their style of play doesn't fit anymore. Again, there's more to it than just the coach.
Another interesting thing happening in the West is with the Colorado Avalanche. While the Ducks have been the main focus, the Avalanche have been a minor focus, but a main focus for me. So over their last 27 games, they're sporting a 5-16-6 record. That is also horrendous. Not quite as bad as the Ducks, but it's bad. They've given up 107 goals, scored 82, so not as bad of a differential. But they currently now have an 8-game stretch without a win. They have 55 points, 4 points out of a playoff spot. But earlier in the season, people are talking about Nathan MacKinnon, Mika Rantanen. They're going to be MVP candidates. That line is the best line in the NHL. Well, what's happened to Colorado? They're 22-22-11. I mean, it's about as 500 of a team as you can get. And that first line, you haven't heard really much about them in the last few months. They've fallen out of a playoff spot. Is their coach next to move? Is he going to be the problem like Carlisle was? I mean, I know you said it before that if that first line stops producing, then that team is going to stop producing. We've seen MacKinnon and Rantanen fall out of the point race, and we've seen Colorado fall out of the playoff picture.
It goes hand in hand. We talked about it on the show. those guys went from top 5 to top 10 in scoring, and their team has suffered with them. So it's not that they're playing poorly. It's not that Colorado is playing poorly, but they aren't getting the same results as they did early in the season, and it's taken them out of the playoff race. It's tough to build a team around those two guys and those two guys only, and Colorado's learning that right now.
Definitely be interesting to see what happens to Anaheim and Colorado moving forward. However, for us moving forward, once again, we're going to take another quick break. Coming up, we have quick picks and bowl predictions do make their return this week, so please stay tuned.
It starts with one thing. I don't know why. It doesn't even matter how hard you try. Keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to explain in due time. All I know, time is a valuable thing. Watch it fly by as the pendulum swings. Watch it count down to the end of the day. The clock takes life away. It's so unreal. Didn't look out below. Watch the time go right out the window. Trying to hold on to, didn't even know. Or wasted it all just to watch you. Everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to be will eventually be a memory of a time I tried so hard and got so far. But in the end, it doesn't even matter. I had to fall to lose it all. But in the end, it doesn't even matter.
One thing, I don't know why. Keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to remind myself how I tried so hard. In spite of the way you were mocking me, acting like I was part of your property, remembering all the times you fought with me, I'm surprised it got so. Things aren't the way they were before. You wouldn't even recognize me anymore. Not that you knew me back then, but it all comes back to me in the end. You kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to me will eventually be a memory of a time when I tried so hard and got so far.
Welcome back to Sports Takeover. Matt and Chris, we are going to wind things down like we used to at the beginning of our show. Quick picks and bold predictions.
Going back to basics.
The classic to end the show. We'll start with quick picks. Chris and I both went 5-2 last week. A very good week for both of us.
A good week for once.
Let's see what we can do this week. Canadians at Predators. I'm going to take the Montreal Canadiens. They have a point in each game that they've played, at least one point, since January 19th. 4 days off, good road team. I'll take the Canadiens.
Boy, I want you to pick Nashville, but I also picked Montreal. They made a trade with the Kings to acquire Nate Thompson, a big physical fourth liner. He's not going to score goals for you, but he's also not going to let the other team score goals for you. It's a good move for Montreal, good move moving forward. I'm going to go with the Canadiens. Staying in hockey, we have Stars against the Hurricanes. Wild card matchup, not in the same conference, but two teams that are currently sitting right there at the wild card bubble. I'm going to go with Carolina. They've just been playing really well recently. A lot of good things coming from them. Sebastian Aho has been doing well. Dallas is still a team that's very iffy. They got berated by their owner a few weeks ago. I don't know what they're going to do in this game, but I do think that Carolina will take the victory here.
These are two teams that need some big points. I'm going to go with the Hurricanes as well. They're slightly better in their last 10 games than the Stars have been. The East is better, so the fact that these two teams are both in the wild card race, I think, says more about the Hurricanes than it does about the Stars. And Dallas is in the middle of a five-game road trip. I'll take Carolina. The Blues at the Wild, I'm going to take the St. Louis Blues because these are two teams that are trending the absolute different direction. The Wild have just lost their captain to injury. They haven't been playing well. The Blues are on an eight-game winning streak. Minnesota has one win this month. I'll take the Blues.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Blues as well. I thought we were going to start picking different teams here, Matt. What are we doing? But yeah, the Blues have been playing really well recently thanks to Jordan Binnington. Rookie goalie kind of came out of nowhere. People didn't really think he was going to be a goalie going into the year for the Blues. It was all Jake Allen. Well, right now, Binnington is getting the job done. Obviously, eight wins in a row is going to help you out here. Let's make it nine against the Wild. I have St. Louis. Moving into the NBA, Western Conference playoff matchup potentially preview here. We have Golden State Warriors going to Portland to face off against the Trailblazers. It's really hard to pick against Golden State anytime they're in anything, so I'm not going to break in here. I'm going to go with Golden State. They are the better team on paper. DeMarcus Cousins is finally playing a bigger role in this team, kind of getting antiquated with them very well. I'm going to go with Golden State.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Warriors as well. I think you knew that this isn't where we were going to deviate. They're 16-1 in their last 17. They have no losses in February. They're just too good to beat when they're playing basketball this way. I'm going to take the Warriors. Hornets at Magic, I'm going to take the Magic. They're on a four-game winning streak. Both have been pretty average in their last 10, but Charlotte is bad on the road, like really, really bad on the road. So in Orlando, on a winning streak, I'll take the Magic.
Yeah, Charlotte is just relying on Kemba Walker. One man can't get it done. James Harden can. Kemba Walker cannot. I'm going to go with the Magic as well. Saw a clip today of Aaron Gordon from the dunk contest a few years ago. Kind of inspired me to make this pick, so I'm going to go with the Magic. Staying in basketball, moving into college, top five matchup. Number one, Tennessee travels to Lexington to play number five, Kentucky. Kentucky just lost last night to LSU. I don't think they're going to lose two in the same week. I'm going to go with Kentucky here. I think number one, Tennessee is finally going to go down. Kentucky is a team that is built for the playoffs come March. It's February now, so they need to start get the ball rolling. I think taking off number one is the best way to do so.
There it is, Chris. I thought we were going to have them all the same, but I have Tennessee. This game on the men's side. Tennessee's only loss is in overtime against then number two Kansas. Kentucky's had some inconsistent losses throughout the season. I like Tennessee more. I think they're a solid team. I'll take Tennessee. On the women's side, number six Notre Dame and number 12 NC State. Both of these teams are 3-2 in their last five. They have suffered some losses recently. I like Notre Dame just because they're such a strong team year in and year out. NC State, I'm impressed with this season. I think they have more to prove than Notre Dame. So until they do it, I'm going to take Notre Dame.
I'm going to change too as well on this one. I will pick NC State.
Very nice.
It's very hard to separate these two teams. As you said, they are both 3-2 over their last five. Not a lot really separating them. However, NC State does have the home court advantage for this game. I think they're going to use that to their advantage. I'm going to go with NC State here. Moving forward, we have some bold predictions to cap off the show, and I have three. So I will start with my first one. It'll be in the National Football League. Antonio Brown trade rumors are all around. Obviously, we haven't talked about it just because we like to avoid Steelers drama. I will avoid it for the most part by saying that Antonio Brown will not be traded. He requested a trade. It doesn't mean that he's automatically given the green light to go to whatever team he pleases. He is still under contract by the Steelers. I do not think we will trade him. I will say that.
People don't forget he's under contract. He's not gone yet. I think he will be traded. We will see. For the time being, he is still in Pittsburgh. I'll stay in the NFL. Kareem Hunt, who we said got signed by the Cleveland Browns, I'm going to say he won't ever play for the Cleveland Browns. And the reason I say that is because it's only a one-year deal. He's still on the commission exempt list, which means he can't play football right now. There's going to be a suspension coming. There's legal ramifications on the way as well. I think there's a lot to be hashed out. And when there's only a year to do it, I think it's very possible that the Browns took this risk on absolutely nothing and Kareem Hunt will not play for them.
I'd be very glad to see that happen. That is certainly a bold prediction I hope becomes true. My second one will move back into college basketball. Duke, they're a powerhouse year in and year out, overcame a 23-point deficit to Louisville last night to end up winning. I don't think that they're going to win the ACC tournament, though. That doesn't mean they won't do well in March Madness. I just think come conference tournament time, some team, Virginia, UNC, Virginia Tech, Louisville, one of those two, three teams could possibly take down Duke, so I do not think they will win the ACC tournament this year.
Very interesting. I'm going to go to the Alliance. We talked about them a little bit. Only one week in, so there's still a lot to see, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the Arizona Hotshots and the Orlando Apollos will win their conferences in the regular season. Playoffs aside, championships aside, I think these will be your regular season conference, or excuse me, division champions. Again, there's a lot to still be hashed out. They were the highest scoring teams in week one. They just played solid all-around games, which I didn't see from a lot of teams. So I'm going to say that those two are my early favorites.
Yeah, they definitely look like the most complete teams right now. Wouldn't be surprised if they ended up being on top come the end of the season. I will finish out bowl predictions with a Daytona 500 one. I got very excited talking about the beginning of the NASCAR season, so I'm going to finish with one. Clinton Boyer. He has not won a Daytona 500 in his career. He's been having a resurgence recently this past year. Stuart Haas Racing is good for him. I think he will be this will be his first Daytona 500 victory this year. I have Clint Boyer winning this year.
Very nice. My last one will come from the National Hockey League. We've been talking about the Western Conference. I think that the difference between the last wild card in the Western Conference and the team that comes in dead last in the Western Conference will be a difference of 15 points or fewer. Currently, the difference is 8, which is kind of incredible. The average over the last 5 seasons between the second wild card and the team at the very bottom of the conference, in the Eastern Conference, 34.4 points. In the West, 30.2. The closest in any given season was in the Western Conference, 17. So I'm going to say 15 or fewer because for some reason we are ridiculously close in the Western Conference between playoffs and dead last.
Well, all the Western Conference teams better hope that Anaheim starts winning, because if they continue down the path they are on right now, it'll be larger than 15 points. Very bold, I like it.
All right, that's it for us. Thanks for tuning in to RMU Radio. This has been Sports Takeover. Same time next week. Good night, everybody.